Welcome to the Mobile Games Playbook, in association with Liftoff. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in user acquisition, monetization, and mobile game design.
Hello, and welcome to the Mobile Game Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. And in fact, I've just been reminded this is our 50th episode, so well done to us. And if you haven't listened to all 50, you need to have a look in your podcast history and see what we've been talking about for the last 49 episodes. But just a reminder, this is the podcast all about what makes a great mobile game, what is and isn't working for mobile game designers, and all of the latest trends. I'm your host, John Jordan, and joining me today, we have two experts to dig into a particularly interesting area. So we have Kalle Halkalainen, who is the Chief Market Analyst for China at Game Refinery. How's it going, Kalle?
Very good. Thanks for asking. How about you, John?
Yeah, not bad at all. Not bad at all. 50 episodes. Wow, that sort of crept up on me there.
Wow.
Good. I think for the first time. So it's always exciting to have a new expert. So we have Ilka Rinola. How are you doing, Ilka?
I'm doing fine. Inka, yeah. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good, good. And you are another Chinese market expert at Game Refinery as well. So obviously we are talking about China, and it's sort of hard to know where to start really with China, I think. Obviously been the largest mobile games market for quite a while, just in terms of obviously having a lot of people who play a lot of games, but increasingly obviously is the place now where games are made that are successfully globally and not just sort of in the Chinese or the Southeast Asian region. So Kalle, you're going to kick us off, just give us sort of a top overview to sort of get our mind into shape around the Chinese mobile games market, and then we're going to drill into some various topics as we go.
Yes. So I was thinking that what makes the Chinese market so special, and I really nailed it down to three major points, I think. So I would say, first of all, it's like you said, John, the market is huge. They have a big domestic market that has a big appetite for gaming. So, for example, last year, the market size was something like $45 billion. 500 million people in China play online games, which translates into 52% of the population. So that's quite interesting numbers. And that's a huge market by any standards. And then the second point is the access to capital in the market, and access to a very talented and relatively inexpensive workforce. So there is money to make investments domestically as well as overseas. So that's why we see these splashy investments. Tencent buys shares of Riot, Epic, Supercell, and stuff like that. And as I mentioned, great access to relatively inexpensive labor, which then enables studios such as miHoYo to exist that have a headcount of something like, I don't know, 4,000 employees or something like that. and then as the third point, I would say the regulations, in the way that they shield the domestic market from foreign games to enter the Chinese market. And I know that we're going to discuss this topic later on, but it was, let's just put it that way, that it has never been a very straightforward process for Western developers to enter the Chinese market and operate their game there.
I mean, I guess it's, as you said, we'll discuss, it's not always been the easiest place for Chinese developers either. So it's
well, that's true as well. Yeah, and also I think it's good to, like, people are a lot of times ask that why. Like, why is mobile so much associated with Chinese gaming and stuff like that? So I guess just giving a bit of context around that could be interesting as well. So concepts like games as a product, boxed products and stuff like that, and console gaming in general, they never actually played a big role in China. And there are various reasons for that. We don't want to go there right now, but things like piracy and the fact that console gaming was banned for a long time in the country played a role. And the gaming population just, it was always exposed to free-to-play and mobile gaming from the get-go. So there wasn't that kind of a big shift from boxed products or console gaming to free-to-play as we saw in the West. And instead, what we saw is that for a lot of Chinese players, their first exposure to gaming was through mobile and PC. And the prevalent business model has always been free-to-play in China. And a lot of Chinese also live in relatively small and cramped apartments, and the families are big. There's often multiple generations that live under the single roof. So it's not easy to find a place where you can actually, you know, have your PC rig set up or TV console installed. And even if you did, gaming never has been a commonly perceived as a healthy hobby. So for the underage, that has, you know, always been, they have been always forced to go outside or play secretly, and that mobile devices allow you to do that, if you understand what I mean.
That's a good point. So it's sort of the point at which mobile free-to-play mobile games were sort of getting big was also the point at which you had this sort of big change in the Chinese market as well. So you have sort of a, you know, obviously a large population and a lot, you know, a very sort of strong middle class developing there, just at the same time when sort of the world is really getting to free-to-play mobile, and there's just no history of gaming anywhere else. So you sort of have that a little bit in Japan, but Japan would obviously be massively into consoles as well. So in Japan, you sort of have really strong consoles, not a lot of PC, but a lot of mobile. Whereas in China, just all that growth and all that interest in games was just pushed into free-to-play mobile. So it's just why it very quickly became this enormous sort of power.
Yes, that's a good point. There's definitely an overlap in timelines there for sure.
Okay, so that's our sort of headline. And now, Inka, you're going to go into a bit more what's going on sort of trend-wise at the moment, which is obviously going to give us some detail.
Yeah, so about a bit overall market first. So it's still very like Tencent and NetEase dominated market, and mid-core is still a big thing. But actually, interestingly, the casual has been on the rise right now. So it's like last year, mid-core lost 7% of the revenue market share, and casual actually grew 4%, and also casino like 2%. And there's like a lot of different interesting things in the casual that has been affecting this. And one of the most interesting is the game called Eggy Party. It's this stumble guys type of game, which has very deep social experience also. Like, for example, you can walk into a shop and see other players at the same time there. And Eggy Party was actually like third biggest on the Q2. And it's like grown into this whole big thing within a year. So that's drawing a lot of casual players in. And in addition to that game, there is also a lot of other like casual games that are interesting. For example, there's one merch game called Fat Goose Gym. That's like merch games are not very common in China, but that has been very popular. And genre-wise, there's also like a lot of interactive story games that have been published. Quite recently, but like there's coming new interactive story games every now and then. So it's definitely growing. And also there's this cozy game thing. And it's also like in China, because there's this one tycoon game called Taoyuan Xianchu Yourenjia, which is this very beautiful water-painted soothing game where you manage a village somewhere in the fantasy world, and it's this very cozy and soothing and nice gameplay experience. And also like feature-wise, there's interesting stuff happening, like limited time gachas, bulk gacha discounts. They have all like become more popular, and there's big difference between like top 20 games and other games. So it's like the overall idea is this like more casual, I think.
I was gonna say, when you say cozy games, that's more like a genre of sort of a sort of a style of game that makes you feel sort of comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's also like a Western thing. Like in general, people like to have these kind of cozy games, and apparently China has also this kind of thing happening, that some people want to play these more chill games, not so like stressful. And yeah,
I just wanted to add on the Inga mentioned about the socialness of the game, and if we look at the basically all the top games in China, but also the casual games, we mentioned Eggy Party, which is obviously entirely based on a social experiences. Inga mentioned the social hub that is there, and you can create your own home there, decorate it, invite friends to come over, decorate the home with them, and engage in all kinds of social activities in the game with your friends. And also the Fat Goose Gym game that you mentioned, the merch game. Well, one of the things, there's actually a lot of interesting aspects in that game, because in the West, the merch 2 genre has been a little bit of, how should I put it, and stagnant in the sense that we haven't seen large feature evolutions in the genre. And I'm not saying Fat Goose Jim is doing anything super wild there, but what they have there is, for example, a chat function. They have friend lists and send ask features, which are something that we haven't seen in the Top Crossing Merge 2 game. So that just tells about the Chinese developers and their emphasis on the social aspects of games. So no matter the genre, they are thinking how we can add social elements into the game, which obviously, like we all know, is a huge sort of a weapon for you to utilize if you think about retention and how to make your players stick to your game and stuff like that. So they are definitely masters of that.
Yeah, and it's especially Chinese people especially love social aspect in the games. But of course, it's like in Western games, it has become also like more popular to have some kind of social elements. And maybe it has something to do with China having them a lot. So we don't know.
I mean, I guess, again, a very sort of high level, not an expert view from me, but you know, mobile apps in general are much more sort of sophisticated in that respect in terms of China. So people in the West, like everyone says, oh, people spending too long on their mobile phones on Instagram or something like that. But obviously in China, you sort of have these, you know, sort of, we'll see what Elon Musk manages to do with X, but these idea of sort of like everything apps. So you have these sort of apps that are sort of like Facebook, Twitter, shopping, all merge into one, don't you? So I guess in general that audience just sort of expects a sort of a more sort of sophisticated experience from just it being a game that you have your game friends in. I mean, the people are just much more, I think, used to sort of sharing that sort of stuff. At least that's my sort of impression.
Yeah, that's a good point. There are a lot of experience, like gaming experiences in China that, like you said, they offer under one roof, as to say, they offer a lot of different kinds of experiences. So just to give you an example, like you have Honor of Kings, which we all know is a MOBA game, but you can have, you know, a Fall Guys mode there. You can have an auto chess mode there and stuff like that. Or QQ Speed, which is a Mario Kart racer, but then you can have a dancing game mode there, you can have that Among Us mode there and stuff like that. So they're very quick to look at what's trending, not only in China, but also in the West, and then add those elements that they see trending to their own games. And it doesn't matter if the core genre or the core loop in the game has anything to do with that trend that they're looking at. So that's always very, very interesting to see when those things happen.
Yeah, and also like the addition of something else than the core game is like the thing. Like, for example, in the Fat Goose Gym that you mentioned and I mentioned before, it's a merge game, but there is this menu where you can access like multiple different mini games. So you will never get bored because you have, like, if you're bored with the merge game, then you can play some other type of game mode at the same time. And I think the new games now have, like, added even more of that stuff than before. And there's also this new MMORPG called Justice, and that one also has, like, a really social wall where you can, like, see where your game friends right now are doing whatever they are doing inside the game. So I think they're, like, thinking about it even more than before.
Maybe it's a silly question, but you have to ask it. So obviously, you know, you talk about games, which the translation or the transliteration of sort of something like Eggy Party or something like sort of Fat Goose Gym obviously sounds sort of funny in a sort of maybe different way to us. But in terms of in China, there's something like Fat Goose Gym. Does that, I mean, is that just like a translation of those words, or does it sort of in China, does that seem like a, you know, like in English, Stumble Guys is sort of like...
It depends on the game. Like, sometimes they have their own translation name, but sometimes we just need to put it in action by ourselves, and it might sound a bit silly in, like, English language.
Yeah, because I was wondering, like, there may be phrases in Chinese which the sort of the game title plays off of, which would sort of make sense to a Chinese audience, whereas for us it just sounds like, you know, no one here would release a game called Fat Goose Gym, or I don't sort of think they would do that. You would just...
Or would they?
Well, maybe, I don't know.
I know that Eggy Party, at least, is the official name that they use, but actually with Fat Goose Gym, I'm not 100% sure, was it one of our analysts that made it up, or did we look it up for somewhere? That's actually something that I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, So in terms of sort of from what you were saying there, it was interesting that sort of mid-core, which is Chinese and sort of Asian markets have always been very, you know, sort of focused on because that monetizes is better. And I guess maybe if that's going down a little bit, that maybe is the market is sort of expanding a little bit. Do you think, is that a, can we make that as a broad trend or is that, am I sort of making stuff up there?
So you mean that the market expanded beyond mid-core to casual and other spaces?
Yeah, I mean, are people playing less mid-core and moving on to these other things? Or is, I imagine over time, sort of more people who wouldn't call themselves gamers sort of eventually end up playing games. So you sort of have a sort of, you know, a widening of the audience, but maybe becoming less concentrated in the sort of more core element.
The way I see it is that I think we as players, we at times we might be motivated by different kinds of things. So if we think about games like I mentioned that a QQ Speed has, or maybe a mid-core game is a better example. So if Honor of Kings has an, you know, casualish game mode in there, I think a lot of people don't mind like playing that casualish game mode, even if it happens inside a mid-core game. I think there's even especially these big games that have like what tens of millions of players, there's so much different kinds of player types and so much different kinds of motivations to play the games that a lot of them might have additional, you know, motivations and appetites for their game genres in addition to let's say the mobile gameplay in Honor of Kings. So I think that's just sort of like adding more value to these players and giving something that they can, you know, feed their specific motivations that they might have. So I guess that's how I think about that.
And in addition, I think that it might have something to do with the same thing as in the West, that like the gender who play the games have also diversified. So maybe earlier it might have been more like male-dominated thing and then it's like more female players. And well, often they play, for example, those interactive story games or customization games or something else casual. So there's like a need for those genres too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it was researched some time ago that the demographics, for example, for Honor of Kings was the percentage of female players was really high. It was like close to 50% or something like that. So that was really like surprising. So no wonder that they're also looking for serving that kind of demographic.
It's, for people who don't know, Honor of Kings is like a mobile MOBA. It's effectively sort of a League of Legends type game, isn't it? That would be an interesting point of view if it was that audience was sort of had a wider demographic, because you have these games which are sort of about one thing but have all these other things in there, then you can sort of, that's a sort of more interesting audience. Whereas it was striking, you know, it is striking that I don't think, you know, in the West, I don't know, I mean, it's probably culturally, that if you had a shooter game and then put a merge in there, I mean, the fan base would be, you know, maybe this is me putting too much sort of stress on the point, but it seems to me maybe that sort of Western audiences treat the sort of coherence of the game as that's sort of quite important. If you have a game, the sort of the game needs to make sense. You know, you can do weird things in the game, but there needs to be some sort of reason why you're doing weird things in the game. Whereas I think if Asian markets, not just for China, it doesn't matter if you've got a shooter game and you put a merge game in there. If everyone likes it, just, well, that's fine, because we'll get on with it. But I don't know.
Yeah, but then on the other hand, in the West, we're seeing a lot of hybrid games and we have things like puzzle RPGs that, you know, combine mid-core elements to certain kind of casual elements and other examples like this. So, but yeah, I get your point. Maybe in the West, it wouldn't be that easy in a way to pull that kind of thing off.
I think for a live game, you'd probably find the core audience. The core audience generally get very moany about things they don't feel are part of the core experience. And anyway, let's move on. So I guess one of the other sort of big trends over the last maybe 5 years, more than that, but is sort of previously, Chinese were very good at making games for sort of China, Southeast Asia, maybe Japan, Korea. But we've really seen now, I guess, you know, Chinese games be very successful globally. And then obviously Chinese developers sort of co-developing or, you know, having access to IP like Harry Potter and Diablo and all those sort of things. And really that's sort of been, I think, quite a big change to my mind, that Chinese games are as big globally as they are in China. Do you think that's a sort of fair assessment? Is that a big trend, or am I overseeing that?
Chinese games not being so big?
No, they are so big now. Previously, you sort of had Chinese games tended just to be big in Southeast Asia or China or those areas. Whereas now, I think, you know, Diablo clearly was, there's lots of sort of discussion around that game and how grindy it was going to be. But I think most people just think, you know, Diablo Immortal is a really good game. That's my impression of it, at least. So it didn't really, the fact it was made by a Chinese developer. And obviously, Call of Duty, Chinese developer. I mean, almost like all the big IP games now.
Yeah, I think there's been a definite change that we see a lot of more China originated games in the West and globally as well. So if you look at, for example, the Forex strategy space in the West, it's all China games. Really, it's dominated by them. We see they have a big presence in genres like RPGs, in shooters. And where I think the next sort of like big move is going to be is going to be in casual. So we're already seeing some signs of that in Match 3, for example, like Project Makeover is made by Magic Tavern that has origins in China, and games like Gossip Harbor by Microfun and stuff like that. So I think their presence is just gonna get bigger.
So one thing we sort of headlined at the start was Chinese regulation. So I don't know how much detail you want to go in on that one, because that could sort of be a podcast in and of itself, all the changes that have happened. But how do you want to inform us about the Chinese regulation of mobile games and the impact that has?
Yeah, I think this is, as you said, this could be its own podcast, and definitely I'm not the experts out there when it comes to this topic, but it's always been an interesting one, and definitely as a China analyst, you get exposed to this stuff. But I guess what I want to just go through is the different types of regulations that are there, because that's also sometimes a bit confusing. People talk about regulations, but what do they actually mean? So obviously, there's regulations on the market entries for Western developers to China. So you need that special license to enter the market. And maybe some of the listeners might know that there were several years when no licenses were given to Western games, but now in the last year or year or two, these regulations have been slowly being eased off. So that's one thing. The second thing is that there are regulations on children's playtime and money spent. So how they are tackling this is with different kinds of login credential requirements and stuff like that, but according to some of the reports and research that I've found, apparently the restrictions can be bypassed quite easily. And actually, when minors' playtime has been researched after these regulations have been implemented, there hasn't really been any sort of major decline in minors' playtime. So it might be that these regulations haven't maybe worked as well as they were initially planned to work. And then third one is regulations on the content of the games. So China being China, there are things you need to consider when it comes to, for example, content on LGBTQ content, for example, or you cannot criticize certain things about China in games and also about sexual topics and stuff like that. So that's also a bit different when it comes to operating in the West, obviously. And then monetization regulations. And one thing that comes to my mind is straight away is, for example, that starting from, I think it was 2017, all the games have had to disclose their gacha drop rates, for example, in the game. So there's a lot of different types of regulations. So when people talk about regulations, it's always good to clear up what kind of regulations are they actually meaning.
And in terms of that first one, are there any notable sort of Western developed games that are doing well in China these days?
There are some, but there are there's a clear sort of like change that has happened. I've worked here for 7 years, following closely the Chinese market. And when I started, it was very common for Western developers to have the same game with the same game ID that they have in the West in China as well. So whenever there was an update to the game, you could always rely that it was it's the same build, the same ID, the same update, same content. Of course, they still could have the texts in the game, copywriting, translating, and stuff like that. But it was the same build, the same game. But that has completely changed. I think the change happened like 3 or 4 years ago. Nowadays, you have all the Western games that we see in the China, let's say Supercell games or Playrix's games and stuff like that. They operate with their own IDs. They usually have the partner company that they're cooperating with. Maybe it's NetEase, maybe it's Tencent, maybe it's something else. That is, if you look at the publisher of the game, that's usually the publisher of the game. And they might have been not only translated, but really like localized. Maybe the live ops, the monetization has been localized to a much greater extent than what the differences were like 7 years ago. So there has been a clear shift when it comes to that. And you asked what kind of games there are. Yeah, there's a couple of Supercell games. Inka, you can actually correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Clash of Clans is in the top 200. We have Brawl Stars there. Then we have Homescapes, Gardenscapes. And Inka, does something else come to your mind?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah. And one thing to note is that the number of these games has been decreasing all the time. Now it's very interesting times to look at like how things will evolve now that new licenses are given also to Western developers. Will we see new Western originated games, you know, getting into the top 200, or is it going to stay the same?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly remember when sort of Supercell started launching there, it was sort of seen as a very, very big thing. I guess that was sort of the peak of when the Chinese market was more open, and I think, yeah, it's been downhill since then. But actually, that did remind me of one thing we have sort of mentioned in passing a couple of times, and it may be good to sort of go into a bit more detail. So we do mention Tencent and NetEase as sort of the two big companies in China. Can you give some idea of just how big they are? Because it's not like we'd say, oh, Activision and EA are quite big in the West, but there's sort of, you know, quite a lot of other ones as well. I mean, I don't know the exact figures, but they are just enormously bigger than anything else, aren't they? I mean, they are sort of a duopoly.
Yes, and it's a very drastic difference, especially if you compare to the Western market, which is much more fragmented. If you just look at the, let's say, top 200 grossing games, you look at the publisher, if you had an, you know, Excel CSV output of the publishers of the top 200 games, you would see a lot more fragmented chart of the publishers. But then in China, NetEase and Tencent have a huge, huge market share of the top 200 games. I don't have any exact numbers to throw at you right now, that what is the exact percentage number, but the difference is, it's like night and day if you compare Western and Chinese markets.
I also recall that Honor of Kings takes like really big market share of overall revenue. So, and it's the top one game. So
yeah, I mean, I think at one point it was doing, was it 100 million DAUs or something? I think maybe it's dropped a little bit since then. But this, yeah, it was the biggest game in the world on any platform by, yeah, miles.
Yeah, an interesting thing is there's all, like, it's still, I think, like in the top 10 downloads. Like even it's like a seven, eight. Years old game. So yeah, people just they churn out for a bit, little bit, and then they reinstall the game and it's always in the top. So, but yeah, interesting.
Good. Okay, so we've had a look at sort of where we are and a bit of the past. How do we see the future in the Chinese market? What sort of products are going to be there? Is it, you know, any significant changes, or is it going to be sort of just continuing the sort of the gradual upward peak that we've seen?
Yeah, like when it comes to Chinese publisher, I think I mentioned this already, but they most likely will try to gain even more foothold in the West, because the Chinese domestic market, it is, of course, all the markets are highly competitive, but the Chinese market fiercely so. And the Western markets are very, very attractive for Chinese companies. And one of the reasons why we mentioned the acquisitions that they've made and stuff like that. So I see them as an active player in the West in the future as well. I already mentioned that I think the next big moves are going to happen in the casual space. And one interesting example of that is Microfun. I mentioned this already as well. So they operate the game Gossip Harbor, but they have several other merge games as well. Some of them are merge 3 games. Some of them are merge 2 games. But they have a clear portfolio strategy there, where they cross-promote inside one app, the other app, so that you get rewards in the app that you're playing if you download the other app and do certain kind of tasks there. So they're definitely like trying to move their players across their portfolio games and then increase the overall value of their portfolio that way. I'm not sure if it's 100% something that you actually are allowed to do in a sense, in the West, I mean. But yeah, that's something that the microfund is doing. And I think that the things like these, strategies like these, will be something that the Chinese publishers will definitely consider. And then just regarding on M&A, I think that like in the future, they most likely will be challenged by this Saudi money. We're already seeing some big moves from, for example, Savvy that bought Scopely and stuff like that. So in the future, with the M&A things going on, I think they're going to get more expensive for Chinese companies to engage in, just because of the fact of the competition of the investments also getting higher. Of course, the macro level now, the overall M&A market has sort of like cooled down a little bit. But in longer term, I do think that it's not going to be so easy for them, for various kinds of reasons, to engage in that strategy as well.
I would like to also add that I think that because there's a lot of these West, Chinese games that have been like published in the Western market, but they're exactly the same, and sometimes it doesn't work because it's maybe a bit more like Chinese taste. So I guess that they will get better at kind of localizing them to the Western market in the future, because, you know, younger people are maybe understand better how to do that kind of localization. So I believe that they will get better at that.
It's almost like the reverse of what you're saying, Kelly, where Western developers were putting just their normal game into Chinese markets and then hoping it did well. And maybe for the last few years, Chinese developers will be just putting their Chinese game into Western markets and hoping it does well. But actually they'll realise, well, the game we have for China, it's a good game, but we need to just sort of, you know, maybe some subtle differences, or, you know, maybe some more substantial differences over time, you know, is a way to sort of optimise that for different markets. Certainly, yeah, the taste of Western gamers is still quite different to Chinese and Asian gamers. So maybe it'll be the reverse trend that they'll be learning from that way. Cool. Good. Well, thank you very much to Calais and Inka, and I hope you enjoyed that. So every episode now will be episode 51, I guess, next. Wow. We'll be talking about what's going on in the world of mobile gaming. An awful lot going on, very dynamic, very big markets, and these sort of big companies coming in, and it's always changing. So I hope you subscribe via your podcast channel of choice, or by the video. Now we're doing video. So thanks for watching, listening, and come back next time. See you then. Goodbye.